Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio Show. Today is a special holiday broadcast, and my guest is Amy Newmark, the publisher and editor-in-chief for Chicken Soup for the Soul. Amy and I will be discussing the upcoming Thanksgiving and Chicken Soup's latest release titled Chicken Soup for the Soul, Merry Christmas, 101 Joyous Holiday Stories. Good morning, Amy. Welcome back to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing?
I am doing great. Happy holidays to you and all your listeners.
Wonderful, wonderful. It is always a pleasure to share the airwaves with you, especially during the holiday season. How is Chicken Soup celebrating Thanksgiving this year?
It's interesting. A lot of the people who work here are empty nesters. Mm-hmm. Including me and my husband. And so there are an awful lot of us who are very excited about our children coming home for Thanksgiving. And there's a lot of scurrying around getting groceries into houses that are normally pretty barren. You know, we're always here at work. I know I personally have a lot of shopping to do. But I think that everybody here is really excited about the holidays. It's a family business, and everybody here has families. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited about seeing the kids.
Wonderful. What is Chicken Soup doing as far as the company being thankful for this year?
We have a lot of work on gratitude and thankfulness and kindness. We're really focusing a lot on it. We have a television show called Chicken Soup for the Soul's Hidden Heroes that is on CBS on Saturday mornings in most markets and in some markets on Sunday mornings. And the whole show, the hidden camera show, the whole show is about people being put into situations where they can do a random act of kindness for a stranger. So we have that going on. We also are working on a kindness and anti-bullying oriented program for children, and that's being rolled out in schools nationwide. And then we're also collecting stories for a book called Chicken Soup for the Soul, The Power of Gratitude. That book will be coming out next summer. And we're also putting together a book called Chicken Soup for the Soul, The Joy of Less, which is coming out in April. And so we're extremely focused right now on counting our blessings.
Wonderful. Can you share some of the things that you are personally thankful for this year?
It's always my family, my wonderful husband, our four children and their significant others and their dogs, and the fact that I still have two parents who are living. They're 84 and 86 years old, and I feel very fortunate to have two parents. And I guess I am always thankful for the fact that I don't have to worry about putting food on the table, having shelter. I know this sounds really crazy, but every single morning when I take a shower in my bathroom that I renovated about 10 years ago, I think about how lucky I am that I'm standing there under unlimited warm water in a nice bathroom in a nice house without having to worry about the basics of life. And I think about how probably only 10% of the world's population doesn't have to worry every day about food and shelter. So I think about it constantly.
Very interesting. I'm really glad you brought that up, because sometimes people take things for granted. One of the many things that I appreciate very much being in the United States is the fact that we have Thanksgiving holiday. My first impression of it was like, okay, great, you know, it's a holiday. However, in understanding what it stands for, it brought a lot of meaning into my life, because this is a holiday that actually really doesn't have any religious nor ethnic connotation to it. It's all about mindfulness and to take one day out of your life to really sit down and contemplate and looking back in the last 12 months, basically, to see what are you thankful for? What can you be grateful about? the last 12 months. So I thought that was a very interesting concept for Thanksgiving.
I agree with you. It's wonderful that it's a secular holiday and crosses mm-hmm. all cultural boundaries. And you're right, it's something we can all share as Americans or as people who live in America now. And I love the fact that Canada has it also, but theirs is in October, probably mm-hmm. related to in the old days when it was harvest related, and Canada had to do their harvest earlier because they're in the north.
Right, right. How important is it in expressing gratitude and giving thanks in our life?
You know, it's been scientifically proven that people who are thankful are healthier, more successful, have better relationships. And of course, that seems intuitively obvious, but it has been proven scientifically as well. I mean, the best way to express gratitude is just to say it, to write somebody a note, to keep a gratitude journal, to smile at somebody, to thank them. And there are so many great quotes about gratitude. There's one by Melody Beatty, and here's the quote from her, and I think this is really good about the power of gratitude. Gratitude unlocks the fullness of life. It turns what we have into enough and more. It turns denial into acceptance, chaos to order, confusion to clarity. It can turn a meal into a feast, a house into a home, and a stranger into a friend. So I think that's a really beautiful quote and really sums up the power of gratitude to change our lives. I know that if you are thankful for what you have, you really feel like you have more. And it's interesting. We get so many Chicken Soup for the Soul stories from people who basically learned how to practice being grateful. It's not something where you're either a grateful person or you're not. You can actually decide to become a grateful person and use the power of gratitude to improve your life. And that's why I'm putting together a whole book called Chicken Soup for the Soul, The Power of Gratitude, which you can submit stories to at chickensoup.com until December 15th. We're accepting stories until December 15th. I'm really excited about that book for next summer.
Fantastic. When we look at this holiday season, one of the wonderful things that I'm encountering is your wonderful book, Merry Christmas. The artwork is just fabulous. It's so enticing. The stories are inspiring, and I have to tell you, there are so many wonderful, funny ones as well. The book makes a great gift, so I'd like to congratulate you for that, because I believe you guys publish Christmas books every 2 years, that's it, correct?
You are right. You have a great memory. We do them every couple of years, because the stores like to get new ones all the time, and honestly, the old ones are just as good as the new ones, because we get so many great stories. I remember one time we sat down and counted the number of stories that were submitted for one of our Christmas books, and we had received 6,000 stories.
Oh, my God.
And we only published 101 in the books.
So
we have so many great stories to choose from. We leave so many fabulous ones behind. But it is such a great hostess gift, you know, or Christmas gift in general for family or friends, because, you know, you give wine, you give chocolate, you give flowers. Those come and go. But a book that you sign and date and give to somebody, they'll have that forever. And what people love to do with these Christmas books is read them every year before Christmas to basically jumpstart their Christmas spirit, especially if they're feeling like they have a humongous to-do list, they're stressed out. This book reminds them, hey, Christmas is fun, and you get to see all the people you love. And the reason you're working so hard getting ready for Christmas is because you're going to see all the people you love. And the cool thing we did this year was we got lots of great Hanukkah stories. And so we have at least 10% of this book is wonderful Hanukkah stories. And really, Christmas story or Hanukkah story, it's the same thing. It's the joy of seeing family and friends at the holidays. It's the joy of bringing light to what is a very dark time of year. It's the joy of giving gifts to people to show them how much you love them. So I'm very excited about this book. It's actually the largest first printing we've ever done of one of our Christmas books. People seem to just love the cover. The
yes.
stores were saying to us, "We're so glad you finally put out a book with red and green on the cover." And I'm
that's
thinking,
right.
almost all our Christmas books have red and green on the cover. But if that's what you believe, fine. And I just say to them, "Yes, you're right. We're very pleased with the cover this year. Order more."
I have to agree with them because this year's cover, somehow it's so attractive. It's eye-catching. I'm looking at it right now. You got the gingerbread house. You got the presents. And having Santa as your co-author, what else can I say?
So, yes, we were very, you know, we've been trying to bring in somebody who's well-known or even a celebrity to co-author or write the foreword for each of our books. And we were very fortunate that Santa was available this year. And when we registered the book with the Library of Congress, I was surprised to discover that Santa is actually a registered author with the Library of Congress. We had a Twitter party to launch the book,
uh-huh.
and Santa, whose Twitter handle is at Mr. Nick Claus, he came to our Twitter party and divulged some secrets, like, what kind of underwear does Santa wear on Christmas Eve? He wears his lucky red boxers. And Santa also, in our Twitter party, made it very clear that no matter what Mrs. Claus says about his cholesterol and his weight, he wants those cookies on Christmas Eve. It's the only day all year he gets the cookies, and he really doesn't want us to listen to Mrs. Claus. He likes the cookies. He depends on us for the cookies. So he says, cookies for me and carrots for the reindeer, okay? But we had a lot of fun working with Santa. And by the way, our Christmas books are always appropriate for children of all ages. We keep the magic alive for children. You grown-ups out there know what I'm talking about. Children can pick up our books, and all of the magic of Santa will remain intact for them in reading one of our books. So if you have a precocious 8-year-old, your precocious 8-year-old can read our book without fear of destroying any of the magic of Christmas.
Wonderful. Who came up with the idea to include the funny artworks in the book? They're fabulous. They are really a wonderful addition to the book. I believe they really embellished the book very well.
Well, Chicken Soup for the Soul has been in business 23 years, and it was founded by Jack Canfield and Mark Victor Hansen, and they always put cartoons in the books. And when I became publisher in 2008, I continued that tradition in books where it made sense. I didn't want to put cartoons in serious books about grieving or traumatic brain injuries or other difficult topics. But where it makes sense, we still include cartoons. And this time we actually reached out to some English cartoonists also. And you know, there's that wonderful dry British humor. And so we have cartoons from some British cartoonists in here also. And it's really fun. We had a wonderful time picking out cartoons. I think there are at least 10 cartoons in here. And yes, they do add a lot of value to the book. And then the other thing we did that adds a lot of richness to the book is that we hired a new graphic designer who used to design magazines. And so he's been bringing that magazine design sensibility to our books. And so at the beginning of each chapter, there's a wonderful spread. That's what it's called in publishing, where you have the left page and the right page. There's a wonderful piece of art that spans the left page and the right page that shows Santa going off in his sleigh. But the fun thing about our books, especially these Christmas books, is how much we decorate them inside. So you're not just looking at white pages with black text on them. You're seeing artwork all over the place.
What I like about Chicken Soup books over the years, I'm looking at the evolution of the book in terms of its attractiveness, the warmness. When we talk about Chicken Soup, we are talking about the warmth from the heart. And I have to agree with all the bookstores out there that this Chicken Soup book definitely represents that.
Thank you.
Did you learn something special about the holidays while putting this book together?
I did. I am always amazed by the creative ideas that our contributors have. And I've been doing this job for 8 years, and I've read tens of thousands of Chicken Soup for the Soul stories, and I still keep learning from our contributors because they're writers, and they're very creative. And I got so many new ideas for fun things that you can do at Christmas time. So what I love about this book is that you don't only get into the Christmas spirit and, you know, laugh and maybe tear up at some of the stories, but you also get a lot of really practical ideas that you can use for gift giving, for decorating, for reducing your stress levels at Christmas time. Like one contributor, Ava Pennington, who I actually got to meet in Boca Raton last Saturday. She's one of our most prolific writers, and I was down in Florida, and I got to meet her. Her story in this book is about doing a progressive dinner party, and she and her friends used to want to see each other's Christmas decorations, but they didn't want to host a whole dinner party, and so they would each do one course, and they would change it each year. So each year, a different couple would do the appetizer, a different couple would do the entree, a different couple would do the dessert, and they would go from one house to the other, having one course at each house, seeing each other's holiday decorations, and yet it was an easy way for them to entertain, a really fun tradition. And I thought, what a great idea. I'm going to try that with my friends. So there are probably a dozen stories in this book that gave me great ideas for things that I could do myself, either now or in the future when I have grandchildren, because there were some fun ideas for things to do with children as well.
They sure do. I mean, when you look at the book and the stories that are in it, one of the things that I gather is all these stories are from the heart, whether it's funny, whether it's something serious. Somehow the holiday story, whenever you talk about that, it brings people back to the set of mindfulness and thinking about, like, gee, it's a time of contemplation and it's talking about family, loved ones in a very special way. Do you have an advice on how to stay merry and happy going into the holiday season?
So my biggest piece of advice is to remember that it doesn't have to be perfect, because I think that's what gets to all of us. And I've had to learn that myself over many holiday seasons, because my job is such a big job. It's so hard for me to pull off the perfect Christmases that I used to pull off. And so now I find that I'll put up the tree really fast and I won't get all the decorations out. And I think basically it's like a museum. You know, a museum only puts out like 10% of its collection at any given time. I feel like I'm putting out, you know, 50% of my Christmas decorations each year. I can't do it all anymore. I can't do all the outdoor lights, but I do what I can. And what really matters when people come is that we're all together and they don't notice if the house is less decorated than it used to be, or if I'm using paper napkins instead of linen napkins at Christmas Eve dinner. And we have stories in the book that I chose because they make that point that it doesn't have to be perfect. Like there's a story written by Anne Morrow about how she had envisioned the perfect Christmas tree, but then when she did put her tree up, her little kids got their hands on the ornaments and they were really only decorating as far up as they could reach. And it was nothing like what Anne had seen in the magazines. And then she plugged in the lights and she realized that the tree was beautiful and what mattered was the love that had gone into decorating it. And I have to tell you something. I know this is going to sound crazy, but when I go to pick out my tree each year, knowing that I am not going to do a fabulous job decorating it, and honestly, it really doesn't matter, I don't take the most perfect tree I could find at the place, because I don't care. I'll take one of the Charlie Brown trees.
Because
I don't care, and I'll leave the nice tree for someone else who really cares. Because I know as soon as I put the decorations on it and I put the lights on, it's going to look fine. I don't need the world's best tree. So I don't even try to get the world's best tree anymore.
So we don't have this comment about, Mom, I think the tree is leaning to the left, you know, something like that, right?
Honestly, I don't care. I'd really rather leave the perfect tree for someone who cares. I mean, there have been a couple of years when I just called the place and said, can you just deliver me the tree? And I didn't even go and check it out first. I mean, they're just going to deliver me whatever they want, because other people are going to stress about it and I'm not. So let the person who stresses about it have the gorgeous tree.
So true. What would you like for the readers to gain from reading this wonderful Merry Christmas book?
I want them to get really excited and remember that the holiday season is not a burden. It's a privilege. And the reason you have so much work to do is because people you love are going to be with you. And so this is a good thing, not a bad thing. And people should focus on what's important. And if they are religious, they can focus on the religious importance of the holiday. And if they're not religious, they can focus on the fact that they're getting together with all the people they love. And so I want people to come away from reading this book feeling excited about Christmas coming and feeling that their stress levels will be lower this year than they've been in prior years.
I believe the book will do just that. So let's get into the various stories in the book. As usual, I've selected some stories that I thought are just wonderful. It has special meanings to me as well. And so speaking about trees, the very first chapter, Tales of the Tree, the very first story, White Spruce from Heaven by Daniel Michael Smith. Let's talk about his story.
Yeah, this was a really interesting story about a miracle that happened. It's about a family where one of the kids was off in the army, deployed overseas, and he wasn't going to be able to come home for Christmas. So 2 weeks before Christmas, he called his mom and said, "I can't come home. I'm probably not even going to be home till March." And she was very disappointed. She had already put up the tree. Her soldier son had sent presents home, so they put his presents under the tree. And then Christmas came and went, and they decided they weren't opening the presents from him, and they weren't going to take the tree down, although they did stop watering it in January. And the tree just stayed green, didn't drop a single needle, and they just left it there, and they left all the gifts under it. March came and went, and he still wasn't able to come home. And he finally didn't come home until May 10th, Mother's Day.
Mm-hmm.
And he came home. They went home. It was spring outside. People were mowing their lawns. But inside their home, they had Christmas carols going on the stereo, and they opened the presents. And then the next day, they took the tree outside. This tree that had stayed green, that hadn't dropped a single needle, the very next day when they took it outside, turned brown instantly. All the needles fell off. But it had lasted through their Christmas on May 10th.
It's a wonderful story. I mean, when you talk about miracles, I think that was just one of those things that, like, wow, that's it. That's all I could say.
I know. It was extraordinary. And we kind of quizzed the guy. We just wanted to make sure it was true. And it was absolutely true.
The next story is a wonderful story. It's from the chapter, The Joy of Family, A Happy Mess by you. And this is good for all the moms out there who are so busy like you.
Yeah. So I wrote this a couple of years ago for my syndicated newspaper column.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't have any, well, I do have it still, but I've cut back on the number of columns per week that I have. But I wrote this when I was really cranking out my columns. And I wrote it because I was in the parking lot at the A&P, and those of you in the Northeast know the A&P has just gone bankrupt again, so we don't have an A&P anymore. But this woman in the car next to me was bringing her groceries out to the car, and she was mumbling, like, "All they do is eat. I keep having to come back. They eat it all up, blah, blah, blah." And I wanted to say something to her, and then I thought, no, I shouldn't say anything, although I've always regretted it. But I wanted to say to her, and it was obvious, like she was my age,
yeah,
she was an empty nester, and family members were coming back for the holidays. I wanted to say to her, you should be happy you have all these people coming to visit you who are going to eat all of the food. Because those are the people you love. This is a good thing that you're having to schlep home all of these groceries over and over again. But I didn't say anything, but I always thought about it. And so then that Christmas, my husband, who is such a neat freak, you know, Christmas afternoon wanted to already clean up the living room. And I hate doing that. So I wrote this story called A Happy Mess, which is about the fact that my husband wanted to clean everything up immediately. And I like to leave it all there because, first of all, I don't want to spend time cleaning when people are around. But secondly, once I clean it up, it's over. And I want to leave the mess there to remind myself of all the fun that we had. You know, the new stains on the carpet in the dining room, the pine needles that are stuck in the living room rugs, a melted candle wax on the table. Those are all souvenirs of the great time that we had. I mean, we live in our house. Our house is not supposed to be pristine. It's a place where we live, where there's laughter and there's trash piling up and there are sticky spills, right? And there are scratches where there shouldn't be scratches. It's a home. It's not a showcase.
Yeah.
So my story was about how I take my time cleaning up from Christmas and I savor every bit of that mess for as long as I can, because once I clean it up, I know I have to wait a whole year before it happens again.
What I like about the story, Amy, is preserving and holding on to wonderful memories, because those are the ones that stay with you for a long time, and it's about the connections, the people that you have. It just makes it so much more personal.
I agree. So we'll have that battle again this year. He'll want to clean up and I'll leave everything till the middle of January.
He might have Molly Mate just waiting outside the door. You know that, right?
That's all right. She only speaks to me. They know that. They know not to speak to the husbands.
I see. The next chapter is The Perfect Gift. The story is such a wonderful story. To me, it's funny and yet it's sentimental. My Christmas Scarf by Katie Martin.
I love this. Have you ever opened a present and you look at it and you're not exactly sure what it is, so you kind of go with the flow, you improvise. So Katie always got a great gift from her sister, and one year she opened up her gift and it was a beautiful but unusual scarf. It was red and it had green tassels at the two ends, and there were patches of green and black and burgundy and some gold threads, and it was very large, and every time she wore it, she received compliment after compliment. Everybody said, what a wonderful wide scarf. And so she wore it every Christmas. And finally, one year, she told her sister how much she loved the scarf and how many compliments she got. And her sister looked very puzzled and then got a horrified look on her face and said, it isn't a scarf. It's a table runner. So Katie Martin, if you don't know what a table runner is, it's one of those long, tapestry things you put down the middle of the dining room table. And so that's what Katie had been wearing for years, a table runner. And she laughed so hard, but she says she still wears her table runner as a scarf. It's her favorite Christmas scarf. So I thought that was great.
Not only that, I think it's the fact that she really enjoyed that scarf, table runner in this case. It's the thought that counts. It's such a special meaning for her, and she enjoyed that. I think that, again, it brings back to the human connection we're talking about during the holiday season.
Yeah, I mean, people do use things in different ways, and I think it's fun. So, I don't know, maybe I'll take my Christmas tree skirt and wrap it around my shoulders and wear it as a shawl this year.
Chapter 4 is a wonderful chapter. A Different Kind of Christmas. I love this story because this is what it's all about. It's about the spirit of the holiday season. Our Home for the Holidays by Andrea Bates.
Yeah, so that was the point I was making before. Whether it's Hanukkah or Christmas, it's all the same feelings about gathering your family, picking out gifts, enjoying that gift giving and gift receiving, although of course we all love giving the gifts more than receiving the gifts. And so Andrea is Jewish and her husband is not. And so they do a blended holiday, and that's what we do in our family too. We have one room decorated for Hanukkah and one room decorated for Christmas. Mm-hmm. And so Andrea was talking about how she's raising her child with a menorah under the Christmas tree, with a Star of David ornament hanging from the Christmas tree, etc. And her whole family loves that, and it's a way for them to celebrate all of the traditions that they have brought together in their marriage from both of their families.
For me, this story is so appropriate right now, because when we talk about things that define us, our beliefs, our religious affiliation and so forth. To me, when I was growing up as a child in Malaysia, as kids, we really don't care about those distinctions. Holidays are holidays. Holidays are time for everyone to get together, friends, families, and enjoy the occasion. And so I thought this was a very nice start for especially a blended family.
That's right. I mean, what really matters is getting everybody together, and your own decorations, your own religious beliefs are not, I mean, that's important, but what's really important is that this is a time of year when we can get those grown-up kids to come home, and when we get those faraway relatives to get together,
yeah.
and when we can tell each other how much we love each other through cooking for people, giving them gifts, writing
right.
them cards.
So true. The next chapter, Christmas Spirit is Alive and Well. I thought this is just a wonderful, cute story. Christmas Spirit is Alive and Well, and the story is Santa's Secret GPS by S.K. Knaus.
So I think that every little kid, if he or she moves before Christmas, gets worried about whether Santa will be able to find their new home, right?
Yes.
So this girl was worried because her parents split up in September one year, and they moved into an apartment building. There was no chimney. And this little girl was very concerned that Santa wouldn't be able to get into the building and also that he wouldn't even know where she and her brother had moved to. So she didn't tell her little brother her concern. She kept it to herself because she didn't want to ruin Christmas for him also. But she really was worried. And lo and behold, on Christmas Eve, a whole bunch of presents showed up outside the door of their apartment. And so she was very relieved when her mom said, I think I heard something outside. And they went outside and found all these presents piled up outside the door, which they then moved to under the tree. And so she was marveling at how Santa possibly knew. And I thought it was very cute.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a reminder also that if you have moved and you have little children in your family, it's a good idea to reassure them because they might be secretly fearing this and you don't realize it, but they're secretly wondering whether Santa will be able to find them.
Yeah. This is just a cute story in terms of parents making a big difference in the children's life. And as you mentioned before, it's a wonderful story for children themselves.
Yes, very reassuring.
The next chapter is Holiday Shenanigans. The story that I picked up from this chapter is The Re-Gift by Erica McGee. And I know we all go through this process ourselves.
Oh, yeah. When you re-gift and then you have to worry about, okay, where did I actually get this? And is the person who gave it to me going to be at the event where I'm passing it on to someone else? So, yes, that definitely happens. I remember one time I got a gift from somebody. It wasn't a Christmas gift. It was like mm-hmm. a hostess gift. And it was the ugliest candle holders in the world. They were shaped like elephant trunks.
Uh-huh.
And they were so ugly. And I finally donated them to an auction at our school because mm-hmm. I thought, well, somebody might like them. And they were raffled off. And guess who won them? Me. I won them back.
It's meant for you, Amy.
Yeah, and I was so careful. I was like, okay, the woman who gave them to me, her kids don't go to this school. There's no way she's going to be at this school. She'll never see uh-huh. them sitting out on the gift table. So uh-huh. I was really trying to protect her feelings, and then I bought my raffle tickets like a good person, and what do I win but my candelabra that I tried to get rid of. But anyway, this story about regifting is about a family that has a very big regifting tradition. They all do it. And one year, she talks about her grandmother, who one year gave her mother a really interesting sweater. I think that's a polite way of saying one of those classic ugly sweaters on Christmas. But then after Christmas dinner, they pulled out the videos and watched everyone open the gifts from the year before. And what did they see? But the grandmother receiving that sweater that she had just regifted to this girl's mom. So that was pretty embarrassing. And then this girl gave a gift, a wedding present from her Christmas stash to somebody, and she got a thank you note, but she had forgotten to remove from this gift the gift card to her saying who it was from. So she This woman named Erica gave a wedding gift to somebody that had a card in it that said, "Happy birthday, Erica. Love, Aunt Nadine." So it was a little cautionary tale there about being a little more careful when you do your regifting.
I'm sure when it happened, it's not funny. But in hindsight, it's always funny.
Yeah, that one was really bad.
The next chapter is The Joy of Giving, and this is a beautiful poem, Real Christmas Joy by Denise DeWall. Would you care to read it for us, please?
Sure, and Denise is one of our regular writers, and I thought this was a really beautiful sentiment and a good reminder for us to be generous, not just in our families, but outside our families. So, Real Christmas Joy, here is the poem. Those new clothes I've been waiting for, I finally get to buy. And I'm in such a festive mood, for Christmas time is nigh. The store is crowded while I shop, but I don't mind a bit. Arms full, I rush to try things on, wondering how they'll fit. While walking past the twinkling lights hanging in the window, something there draws my attention and my steps begin to slow. A little face is pressed to the glass. His eyes are shining and bright. My glance falls to his ragged coat, and tears I have to fight. He points to toys he cannot have. His lips are moving fast. His mom looks sad as she takes his hand and tries to pull him past. All the things she can't afford but wishes that she could. Her little boy deserves much more. He's always been so good. The clothes I hold now seem heavy. They weigh upon my arm. And suddenly my shopping spree has lost all of its charm. Laying aside the things I chose, I hurry out the door, knowing Jesus wants me to be generous to the poor. I slip my gift into her hand and feel my spirit soar, for her eyes glisten as she leads her son into the store. So I thought that was really sweet, a reminder to make a gift to that local charity that provides gifts for people who can't provide for themselves. But, you know, it's a reminder to give gifts to your local Toys for Tots or your local Neediest Families Fund or your local church fund, whatever it is. Because otherwise you're opening gifts on Christmas Day, you're giving gifts on Christmas Day, and there's a little void there. It's nice to remember that you've given gifts to other people as well, people you don't even know.
So true. You mentioned something very important earlier in the program. We are all excited about giving. Now, think about this. What are you giving to someone and who you're giving it to? And this will be a wonderful, mindful story to think about in terms of the pleasure, the joy of giving something to someone because you just want to do it.
That's right. And, you know, this is an opportunity for me to tell all of your listeners something that I just learned this summer. We did a book called Chicken Soup for the Soul, Volunteering and Giving Back. And my friend Carrie Morgridge wrote a story for it about working for Toys for Tots in her home, you know, her hometown. And she learned that they never get enough gifts for teenagers. And it's partly because it's called Toys for Tots, so we think it's only gifts for little kids. But it turns out that that program provides gifts for teenagers as well. And so she was saying that they need gifts that are appropriate for teenagers. So I'm just passing that on to your listeners because that's what I'm going to be doing this year. There's a local business that's collecting for Toys for Tots, and I'm going to put in gifts that are specifically for teenagers, not for little kids.
So true. I'm glad you brought it up. That was a wonderful broadcast we did earlier in the year, in the summer. So I'm glad you brought that up. It was a wonderful show that we did at that time, talking about the joy of volunteering and giving. The next chapter is Tradition Worth Sharing. And this just speaks to me. I guess maybe I'm too romantic of a guy or something, but it's just a wonderful, wonderful tradition. The story is Love Notes on My Tree by Joan Clayton.
Yeah, this is an example of a story that could give you a great idea that you could use in your own home. So when Joan Clayton and her husband were first married, he was in the Army, and they'd only been married a few months, and they were having their first Christmas, and they had no money. I mean, they did manage to get a little tree, but they had no ornaments. And so her husband wrote a love note and put it on the tree. And then he told her that's what that folded up piece of paper is on the tree. So then she said, okay, I'll write a love note. She wrote one, folded it, put it on the tree. And then he wrote one the next day. And they ended up both writing love notes every day and putting them on their tree. And then on Christmas Day, when they didn't have gifts to give each other, they sat down and read all of the notes that they had written to each other. And then they put the notes in a box. And that became a Christmas tradition for them. And when they had children, the children started writing their own notes and putting them on the tree. And that continued to be a tradition with their grandchildren. And now they're great-grandchildren. And so this has turned into a tradition that has spanned four generations of Joan Clayton's family. And I thought, what a fabulous idea.
Yeah.
And something
yeah.
that families might want to pick up and do themselves.
Yeah. What I like about notes is that as the writer, and I know you agree with me on this, it's like it gives us that opportunity to be really in the zone and to put a lot of thought in what we want to write.
And I
so
think
it's
at
not,
this time of
yeah.
year, people are more mm-hmm. willing to open up their hearts and write what
right.
they're really feeling, and they might be embarrassed at other times of year.
Right. I love this particular story. The next chapter, it's actually my favorite chapter, believe it or not, around the table. Maybe I'm just by
nature. Well, you are a food person. You love cooking, right?
Yeah.
After all, your show is all about love in the kitchen.
That's correct. And so the wonderful stories in this chapter, I end up choosing two of those. It's funny. It's humorous. The first one is No Need for Carving by Gail Moresby Morris.
This story made me laugh out loud. I laugh every time I read this story. So Gail was a fairly new wife, and she decided she was going to cook Christmas dinner for her in-laws, and she was not known to be a competent cook. She called her mom, and her mom said, "Are you crazy?" But her mom said, "Okay, here's what you have to do." And so Gail was very, very systematic. She wrote everything down. She had her checklist. She had everything in perfect order. Everything was operating like clockwork Christmas Day. Nothing had gone wrong all season. This was like a military operation.
Mm-hmm.
And they were sitting down at the table, and everything was perfect, and they were eating the appetizers. And then they heard what sounded like a gunshot in the kitchen. They looked around. They couldn't figure out what it was. They ran into the kitchen. Everything looked fine. So they shrugged it off. And then Gail went to open the oven. Well, inside the oven, there were pieces of turkey everywhere. The turkey had exploded in the oven. And there was absolute silence as her mother-in-law looked at this disaster. And then Gail just burst out laughing. Everyone else burst out laughing. They kind of scraped the exploded turkey off the oven. It had exploded like into the sweet potatoes and all the other things that were sitting in the oven with the turkey. And it all tasted just as good as if it had been beautifully carved. And she said the upside of this, the silver lining, is that now whenever there's a family gathering, no one lets her near the oven.
I chose that story because a good friend of mine, she was originally from Poland. She shared the story with me because she did the first Thanksgiving. She cooked the turkey and so forth. Everything looks fabulous, brought to the table. And as they were carving it, it got a little difficult to carve on the inside. Guess what? She forgot to take all the cavities out.
Oh.
You know that when you buy a turkey?
Yeah.
She didn't realize that all that was in the turkey.
Oh,
so.
Great.
So it's like, okay, what do you do? In hindsight. So anyway, not so funny when it happens. I mean, it's embarrassing because your mother-in-law is there. Mm-hmm. I want to have a chef here for my son to marry. I'm questioning whether she can feed my son.
And I'm not, I mean, I cook, but I could definitely have a kitchen disaster, so I really sympathize with her. I've actually never cooked a turkey. Whenever uh-huh. I host Thanksgiving, my mother brings the turkey. I can make everything else, but not that big bird.
Right. So don't forget, there are stuffed pots in the turkey cavity itself.
I'm never making a turkey.
The next story in the same category around the table, and I thought this is really, really funny. Mama's Christmas Cookies by Kevin Kramer.
Yeah, Kevin is a very funny writer. And you're right, all of these stories in this chapter about around the table are pretty funny because those Christmas disasters really are, really do make some of the best memories,
yeah,
don't they?
Yeah.
So he says, because I am the smartest man alive, I lived in my parents' basement until I was 26 years old. And one day during the holiday season, his mother informed him and his father that she was making a batch of cookies to take to work, and she wanted them to test the cookies. So she brought them a cookie to try. And he says, honestly, her spicy gumball gingerbread cookie was the worst thing he had ever eaten. It was just terrible. He could barely swallow. And he could see that his dad was equally devastated by how terrible the cookie was. So then he and his dad were arguing over who had to tell the mom. And the son said, well, she's your wife. You tell her. And then the dad said, no, she's your mother. You tell her. And the son said, well, I didn't choose her as my mother. You chose her as your wife. So the dad was forced to tell. But he didn't want to do it either. And then the cookies were still sitting around. And the next day, the dog got into the cookies. And the son heard a crash in the kitchen. And then 15 minutes later, went into the kitchen and found all the cookies lying on the floor. The dog had knocked them onto the floor, had had 15 minutes alone with the cookies. And when the son went into the kitchen, not a single cookie had been eaten by the dog. So the son said to himself, oh my gosh, even the dog won't eat them. I really have to tell my mom. And so he finally decided he was going to have to tell his mom. But I thought it was really funny the way he wrote it. And mm-hmm. that happens. I remember, oh my gosh, mm-hmm. at Christmas time, my first husband was half Italian, and his Italian grandma would make these really, really, really dry Italian cookies.
Uh-huh.
They were so dry that if you eat one, besides worrying about breaking your teeth,
yeah.
you'd have to go get water. You were like somebody in the desert. I need water. And so she'd make them, and we would, at night when she went to sleep early, we would take them mm-hmm. and throw them in the trash compactor.
Yeah, yeah.
So she'd get up in the morning and all the cookies would be gone. So she would figure we loved them. So we had this endless cycle where she'd say, they love them. I'm going to make them again. So every year we had to throw the cookies into the trash compactor while she was sleeping. And it was this endless cycle, but we couldn't tell her how bad they were. So that story really spoke to me.
The next chapter is Honoring Memories. This is a wonderful chapter as well. It's very heartwarming and very personal. The story is Mom's Christmas Stockings by Daryl Wendy Strauss.
Yeah, so I made this chapter, Honoring Memories, because I know that at Christmas time, of course, we're also thinking about the people who are no longer with us.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to have a whole book that was just funny and merry and without acknowledging that, yes, we are missing people at Christmas time also. And so we do have a whole chapter about people getting together and honoring the memories of the people they've lost by talking about their favorite stories or doing some kind of charity donation in honor of their loved ones who have passed, cooking their recipes, whatever it was. And I loved this story called Mom's Christmas Stocking by Daryl Wendy Strauss. And actually, I met Wendy Strauss a few weeks ago because she lives near her, and I was honored to meet her and talk to her in person about her story. But her mom died, and every year the kids had gotten together and packed a stocking for their mom. And I guess it had started when they were kids, and you know they were getting stockings from Santa, and so they wanted their mom to have a stocking too. And when her mom died, she left them instructions, and she said, every Christmas you have always filled a stocking for me. I want you to continue doing so. Choose the things that I would love, but then take this filled stocking to a woman in need, a woman in prison or in rehab or at a homeless center. This is the most precious Christmas gift I could receive, and this way I will stay part of your Christmas as you give the stocking to another woman. And so Daryl, Wendy Strauss, copied this piece of paper, gave it to her siblings, and that Christmas she found an organization in New York City, and she gave a filled-up stocking to them in honor of her mother, and her siblings all did the same thing, and then they started doing it on a much larger scale, and now they have an official charity called Mom's Stocking, and they've given out hundreds of filled stockings to women in need every Christmas all over the United States.
This is another wonderful tradition to follow. That's why I chose this story, because I thought it was wonderful in terms of the gift of giving and the joy of giving.
Yeah, I thought it was really a great thing to do. And it's true. That's what I love about this book. Besides getting us in the Christmas spirit and entertaining us, it also does give us so many wonderful ideas for things that we could do at our work or in our families or with our friends or at our churches. And this is a fabulous idea, filling stockings and giving them to people in need each Christmas.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of your favorite stories?
Well, there's a story that I love. And the funny thing is that when I read this story, I'd never heard this kind of story before. And then the other day, somebody told me basically this exact same story that had happened to her. So I guess this is something that more than one person has experienced.
Yeah.
And this story is about Joyce Laird's family. And when Joyce was 8 years old, her family, for the first time ever, went and cut down their own Christmas tree. And they brought it home, and they set it up, and they decorated it, and then they went to bed. And in the middle of the night, they heard a tremendous commotion, and they heard their cat and their dog going crazy and chasing something around the house. And sure enough, they had brought home a poor little squirrel in that live Christmas tree that they cut down. And that poor squirrel had hidden in the tree the whole time home, the whole time they were decorating that tree, all of their festivities, that poor little squirrel was hiding in the tree, and then he crept out late at night and was caught by their dog and their cat. And so it was quite a big deal at 3:30 in the morning to find the house in total ruin and to catch that poor little squirrel and let it outside. And she says that was their first and last time cutting down their own Christmas tree.
That story is just fabulous. I love the story. It's called Wild Kingdom, and it's part of the Christmas
tree story.
Yeah, it was great. Yes. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. Are there any other stories that you like?
Oh my gosh. I really loved all of these. I loved the different Hanukkah stories because
yes,
I thought it was really nice to show the different families that do Hanukkah and Christmas. Like the second story in the book, Our First Christmas Tree by Farida Wolf, who's one of our regular writers, she talked about how as a Jewish grandmother, she hosted her son-in-law and her daughter and her grandsons, and they were supposed to go to the Christian side of their family for Christmas, but they all got sick, and so they stayed with her, and so she had to improvise and turn something in her house into a Christmas tree and improvise some Christmas decor for them so that they would still have a Christmas, because normally they did Hanukkah with her and Christmas with the other grandmother. So I thought that was nice.
Mm-hmm.
I really like the fact that we had so many stories in the book about Hanukkah.
So true, so true. Are there any other chicken soup products that will make wonderful gifts for the holiday season?
Well, our books are so inspirational, and one of our contributors, our story writer, sent me a note the other day, and he said, I'm telling everybody they have to give books this year, not just as gifts, mm-hmm. but as hostess gifts, because he said, you know, an inscribed book lasts forever and reminds you of that guest that you had, and I think he's so right. So I mean, the cool thing about our line of books, we have more than 250 titles, is that there's something on every possible topic, and it shows that you've really thought about somebody because you've picked out a book that is right for them, for something that interests them. So, of course, I recommend our books. The other thing that we have, and a lot of people don't know it, is we have a very high-quality line of dog food and cat food. Mm-hmm. And what could be more fun than bringing somebody like a new, you know, a little 5-pound bag of cat food or dog mm-hmm. food or a can of the wet cat food or dog food as a special treat mm-hmm. for the pet in the house that you're going to for the holidays. It's a nice hostess gift to bring a little treat. And if you bring something that we've made, you know it's super high quality. There's not any of that, those ingredients from China. It's all high quality. The first ingredient is chicken. All the ingredients mm-hmm. are things you can read. So that's what I'm going to be bringing to people this holiday season is bags of our pet food so that their dogs and cats can try a high-quality food and have a little special treat that's actually good for them.
Wonderful. We are at that hour where we are waiting for your wonderful recipes for living life. So please share the holiday recipes that you have for us.
Well, I have 5 ways that I think you can make your holidays merrier. And the first is what I said earlier in the hour, which is accept imperfection. It doesn't have to be perfect. And if you accept imperfection for the happiness it represents, you'll have a much less stressful and happier holiday season. It doesn't have to be perfect. The important thing is getting everybody around the table, not what's on the table or what's on the walls. Another important thing is that if you're not home, you can take the holidays on vacation with you. We have a lot of stories in the book from people who aren't home for Christmas. They're traveling, and they can make Christmas wherever they are. And I think our book is wonderful for people who are traveling to show them that Christmas is a state of mind, and it goes with you wherever you are, whether you're on a vacation, whether you're at work, whether you're in the hospital. I mean, my daughter is a physician. She will be working on Christmas. So she'll be taking Christmas with her into the hospital, into work. A third way to make your holiday merrier is to create gifts that will last all year. We have wonderful stories in the book about giving gifts that people unwrap all year long, like experiences. One man gave his wife a different date for every month of the year. So all year long, she was experiencing her Christmas gifts. And then another wonderful way to make the holidays merrier is to start new, inexpensive traditions, such as Joan Clayton's love notes on the tree. And then the fifth idea to make your holiday even merrier is an idea to get progressive with your entertaining. Do what Ava Pennington did and go from house to house. You know, don't mm-hmm. step the burden of making a whole holiday celebration yourself. So those are my tips for making the next month or 6 weeks even merrier.
Fantastic. Those are wonderful, great recipes for living life during the holiday season. And I know this holiday season is going to be a wonderful one for everyone. So to all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be Marie Jagopoulos. She is an intuitive counselor, healer, and spiritual mentor. Marie will be hosting and conducting her bi-weekly Meditation for Moms series and talk about her worldwide consciousness movement, Meditation for Moms. In this show, Mary will be going deeper into the power of chanting meditation and how to assist you to learn the art of presence. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to fmmktalkradio.com. Thanks for listening and have a blessed and awesome Thanksgiving. Amy, it has been a true pleasure. Thank you again and have a blessed and happy Thanksgiving to you and your family.
You too, to you and everyone you love. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.